Isn't it sickening? Isn't it sickening, Herb? Even on CW, we got a bad hum. Look right into your radio. Look carefully. Concentrate. Hold your breath. Be of good cheer. I am here. Il Monstro. I tell you about the scary match cover that I got out of the cigarette machine the other day. Holy smokes. You notice that? Haven't you noticed what's happening to match covers? You remember when they used to just have ads for tomato sauce on them? You know? And hotels out in St. Louis. You remember those days? Now, match covers are carrying real messages. You know, oh, boy, some of them can be very embarrassing. Yeah, the match covers become almost a prime means of underground, very subtle, sneaky propaganda. Well, look at this one here now. It says, support abortion law reform. You get that out of a cigarette machine, man, when you put your quarters in there, and you know, you're with this chick, and you're in this chic East Side restaurant. The next thing you know, would you please give me a little razzmatazz music? If you... You know, tomato sauce was bad enough, but fair enough. Why, hold it, that's enough. Now reset that. Reset that. I'm watching a monster movie. Hey, listen, I want to ask a question. It just come to my, I don't know whether there's any sociological significance here or anything about, you know, that important stuff that Nat Hentoff would write about, or whether there's any significance to it or not, really, but I'm watching this monster movie the other day, and this monster, he's got his laboratory going, and he's pumping the blood out of everybody, and he has this thing that he could turn people into Christmas tree ornaments or something. He's got a big kite up and the electricity's coming. You know the whole shtick. I'm watching this thing and I'm fascinated, of course. You know, no question about it. I relate to the monster. I do not relate to the good guy that comes in and gets him, you know, and all of that. I'm cheering for the monster. And have you noticed all monsters have got this little crummy, rotten little hunchback with them all the time, isn't it? Yeah, this little sneaky guy that plays with a little horn. It's quite a phenomenon, the monster. And it has come to my thinking, for better or for worse, that the monster syndrome is basically a male shtick. I'm sorry. No. Male kids go ape over monsters. What are you talking about? Well, that's because a lot of them date them, you know? I wonder whether girls know all the wild nicknames that male types, particularly kids, have for girls. I mean, you know about those? You don't. Very good. That's the light. Oh, sure, you know, here's this... Yeah, I remember one time, and I'm dating Esther Jane Albury, see, and I've been dating her for a couple of times, you know, about in 11th grade or something like that, you know, and she's all dressed up with her cretonne dress with this great big bow, which is placed in exactly the right place to make her look fatter, and she's got this... this corsage on that looked like I must say this to be honest about it anyway. It was a small orchid, and all orchids to me look like a small type of animal that was about to vomit or something. They got that funny look, you know, the tongue sticking out. And this is, it's an ugly flower. Oh, let's face it. And yes, there's such things as ugly flowers. I'm not a sentimentalist about that. And she had this purple, ugly flower on this chartreuse dress with this bow, you see, that was placed right at the strategic point to add to her avoirdupois, which was considerable anyway. And it wasn't really baby fat, it was more like baby oleo. And so we're dancing around there, and the music is playing, and Schwartz goes dancing past me, and he's with Dawn Strickland, who was an unbelievable chick, and then he goes dancing on past me. Schwartz was 3 feet tall, and Dawn was 6'7", and they go drifting on past them. 5 minutes later, me and Schwartz meet at the Coke counter, I see. And he looks at me, and I look at him, and we each have our Coke clasped in our hands, and the two girls have gone off to the ladies' room. And I take a sip of the lukewarm Coke. Schwartz takes a sip of his. And I say, "Holy smoke, Schwartz. What a pig." He says, "Which one, yours or mine?" I said, "Get out. You're kidding me. Yours or mine." But, you know, these are little things. I suppose the girls have got the terms for males, do they? No, don't they? Oh, doggone it. Holy smokes. Well, I've been called a stick. That I know. I overheard a girl one time saying to another girl, "Oh, what a stick." And I said, "Oh, is there something sticking you? Can I have..." She says, "Oh, no, no." I was, it was not a year and a half later I realized that I was the stick that she was stuck with. She was talking about gum. Yes, that's true. Well, that's a particularly Jersey term because, you see, gum... Jersey specializes in breeding gums. That an Indiana gum is a round haircut. Oh, yeah, you see many a gum sitting over there in those diners on Route 40, on Route 22 there. You know, the Red Star Diner, places like the Blue Eagle Diner. And they sit in there, and their 53 Mercury is out there, and it's got a skull and crossbones in the back window. You know the kind of guy, and that's a gum. But nevertheless, I still think the monster thing is a male thing. And I remember the very first time that I became totally caught up in this monster shtick. I'm about 10, and I saw this movie one Saturday afternoon. And it had to do with Frankenstein. It was, Frankenstein. And if you can imagine a Frankenstein movie sandwiched between a Roy Rogers movie and a Gene Autry movie. There were three types of monster, actually, and there, right in the middle was Frankenstein. See, and it was something about Frankenstein meets the Three Stooges. Some, you know, this is a great camp confrontation type thing, and I'm really digging this. See, me and Schwartz and a whole bunch there. Every time Frankenstein, the monster, his name was not Frankenstein. You know, the monster was not Frankenstein. That was the doctor that made him. It was Dr. Frankenstein. I often wonder what he got his doctorate in, but hey, how many of you know that Fu Manchu did have a doctorate, and he was Dr. Fu Manchu? You know, you've heard the insidious Dr. Fu Manchu. Well, I'm one of the very few people who know, because I was a student of Fu Manchu for years, that very few people know what Dr. Fu Manchu had his doctorate in. Now, don't call up and say orchidology. He was a... His hobby was orchids. He grew these man-eating orchids, a great hobby. And, well, he also grew man-eating toadstools, which was kind of good. I remember the time he fed C. Nayland Smith for the toadstools, but that brings up a thought. Can't you imagine yourself getting attacked by a toadstool in a dark alley some night, you know? But nevertheless, Dr. Fu Manchu did have a doctorate, and I will award the brass figurine with bronze oak leaf palm to anyone here tonight who can tell me what his field of study was, what Dr. Fu Manchu took his doctorate in, and where he did his undergraduate work. You would be astounded. Would you please bring a little monster music in there? And tonight, this concerned radio station, deeply involved in the great cross currents of our time, takes this small moment out of a busy, hurly-burly day of rough-and-tumble broadcasting to salute, if we may, the monsters that have given us so much great times over the past 4,000 eons, ranging all the way from Oedipus, ranging all the way from Cyclops, all the way on to, well, yes, how many of you remember Dr. Cyclops? He's a great monster. And we want to salute all those monsters, past and present, including the present program directorship here at WOR. Bring it up. There's all kinds of monsters. Bring it up, baby. Well, I want to tell you, my first real experience in showbiz. You know, they always talk to actors and they performers. After all, you know, I'm a performer and actor type and showbiz. They always say, well, when did you first begin to act? How did you know that you were drawn to the theater? What was the first magnetic pull that drew you into this vortex of public entertainment? What did you get the call? People somehow relate the acting and showbiz with the ministry or something. You know, you get the call. Well, I'll tell you how I got the call. It was after I saw Frankenstein, the time that Frankenstein met the Three Stooges. I realized as I came home that night, on the way back from the Orpheum Theater, I am walking along a sidewalk, stiff-legged, and I am playing a monster. And I became, in the next 2 years, so unbelievably adept at playing Frankenstein's monster that whenever I wanted to scare my old lady right out of her chenille bathrobe, I would come stalking out of the john, my jaw hanging slack, a heavy limp. I was dragging my left leg. And I would limp along. I would pretend, see, I was trying to communicate with the world around me, which, as you remember, Frankenstein's monster was always doing. My mother would say, don't do that, stop it. I'd go, and I would come stalking up to her with my hands held like two claws about to reach out for her neck. And she'd say, oh, stop it, stop it, stop it. And my kid brother would start crying under the daybed. I would turn. I would stalk towards the daybed. My kid brother, we would have to immediately change him, immediately after that. The only one who never fell for it was my old man. He'd just sit there with a can of beer, you know. He'd look at me and he'd say, oh. I seen stuff that would curl your hair, kid. Then he would get up and throw his shoulders out of joint. He had this trick. He'd go, oh, 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 oh. Instantly, I would stop being Frankenstein's monster and become a blob of silly putty. Oh, don't, 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 oh, I'm scared. All right, that's enough of that. I just wonder if there's anybody out there who, what's that? See, I didn't know. Dr. Frankenstein did not take his, Dr. Fu Manchu did not take his doctorate in demonology. Come on. Which reminds me, this is WOR, friends. And this is the fun station here. And we're right here in the heart of Fun City. And this is Radio Free Broadway. And this is me. But only partly so, sir. There was only one of the doctorates that Dr. Fu Manchu had, and you did not include. He had a doctorate in one other field. And the field that he had this doctorate in, he actually practiced in this field. And some say that he is even now practicing in the field that he took that final doctorate. That is correct. That is correct. I'll be doggone. There is another person out there who knows that. I wonder how many of you know that. That Dr. Fu Manchu, that's right. Somebody called in. This is one of those rare times I'm going to put it out. Dr. Fu Manchu, and this will astound a lot of you, was a doctor who practiced pediatrics. He was a pediatrician. I'm not kidding you. And this is what's going to astound even more of you. Dr. Fu Manchu took his medical degree at Ohio State. Now, you just put that one in your old opium pipe, friend. Puff on that a while. Let that one blow your mind. I mean, it's a great thought, a great picture, though, to see Dr. Fu Manchu. You know, he's working his way. He's pre-med and all that, you know. And he's sitting out there in the at the Ohio State Stadium. And he's in the cheering section. And he's got this little beanie that says OSU on it. And he's a student. He was a student at that time. He had not yet gone into the monster business, you know. It was not always. You know, a guy doesn't start right out at the age of three wanting to control the world. It's only later on when he gets his, you know, gets into... Well, this happens to pediatricians. That's right. It really, honestly, seriously does. The pediatrician has always been known as an oddball among doctors, you know. Because, you see, a baby is like a silly putty. You can do anything with him, you know. But when you're dealing with a 42-year-old guy in the office, he's like, oh, you're out of your mind. What do you mean, stick pins in the bat's wings? Don't give me that, Doc. The kid will do it, you know. So, you know, there are a lot of things. And Dr. Fu Manchu practiced pediatrics for a while. and he took his... I like to think of the picture, one of my favorite mental pictures of Dr. Fu. All right, friends, how many of you know Dr. Fu Manchu's first name? It was not Fu. No, Fu Manchu was a family name. It was his mother's name, a maiden name. Dr. Fu Manchu, what was his first name? Any of you know that? All right. What was his name? Well, why do you just shrug your shoulders and pretend that since you don't know it, that is unimportant? This is all history of our time. And Dr. Fu Manchu took his degree at OSU, Ohio State, on an exchange scholarship basis, in case you're really interested. And it was not from Peking University, but it was an exchange scholarship from Edinburgh. And he took his degree at OSU. And there is some evidence, in fact, there was even one reference in one of the great works of Sax Rohmer, that Dr. Fu Manchu at one time went out for football at OSU. Don't look. And I'll tell you what book it is. It's in a novel called Fu Manchu for President. All right. And one of my great pictures is Dr. Fu Manchu, not doctor yet, of course. Well, he was a doctor. He had a doctorate in philosophy, but it was a PhD, really. But he was working on his MD, his pediatrics. And I can see him sitting out there in the cheering section. They have these big red cards, you know. Chu Fu Manchu, get out of here. Why am I surrounded with insipid people here tonight who refuse to take... And I sense it in the air. There's a terrible... No, his name was not Jack. I'll give you a clue. His first name was not Clarence. And I keep getting these calls. Why? I don't know what the word is. I don't know. I sense it out there today. Nobody's taking me seriously here. What is this? Anyway, Dr. Fu Manchu sat out there in that, and I can just see him in the cheering section at OSU. They're playing Michigan. That was a tough ball game, you know, with Michigan and OSU. That was a traditional rivalry. And I could see Dr. Fu Manchu out there. You know, they had the red cards, and they're making a big lion and a tiger with the red cards. And Dr. Fu Manchu, at that point, it is recorded, as he looked around Ohio State Stadium, began to formulate his first germinal plans for taking over the United States as a step towards taking over the world. Okay? Well, you can do that. It's easy to do that out of a football stadium, you know, when you see that nuttiness going on. You know, speaking of nuttiness, a couple of nights ago we had a little discussion here about that tiger. But we got to get back to our basic theme here. And here's our basic theme tonight. I waited. Well, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute now. Just a minute. Listen, if Eugene McCarthy can ramble on, I can too. You know? I mean, after all, we don't expect... But I'm not rambling, you see. I know exactly where I'm going here, because I was watching that monster last night, and I realized that males have a great... They're attracted to monsters. And I don't know many chicks that really are, although I've wondered about some marriages that I've seen. However... here is a letter that I want to read to you. It's a very important letter here. This kid writes me a letter, and he says, Shepard, I'm with you on that SO election. I am for the ad manager. My problem is my dumb girlfriend. She's for the tiger because he's so cute. This has caused me a great deal of trouble. Last night, while driving around, I stopped at an SO station to gas up. I got my, quote, winning ticket, the thing with the ballot on the top, and proceeded to fill it out in favor of the ad manager. It was a vote for the ad manager. My girl hit the roof. She wouldn't let me near her the rest of the evening. Sat over there and sulked. All this has caused me to reconsider my political position. I'm beginning to wonder if my supporting the ad manager is worth all the frustration it is causing me. It has forced a point, and it has actually reached the position where I'm forced to make a choice between the ad manager and my girl. This throws the entire election into a new light. The ad manager may be a swell fellow, but my girl is okay, too. What is a guy to do? And then he says, P.S., she also objects when I buy Playboy, even though I tell her it's just to read your short stories, like the one on the current issue, which she made me throw out of the window on Route 22. That's an expensive little bit of business to throw out of the window on Route 22. Well, kid, I want to tell you this. I wonder how many guys vote for a presidential candidate just to keep peace in the house. I'm serious. And women have a tendency to vote for people because they're cute. And that, you know, that's bad news. And I just want to tell you how cute that tiger is. We have a note that just came in. And this came in on Reuters, which is a very official news agency. And, you know, if you think that the establishment is bad in your neighborhood, listen to this, friends. A man-eating tiger has killed more than 25 persons and 50 cows in the Hazaribagh area in the space of less than 3 months, officials said. Local hunters said they could not shoot the animal because tiger shooting was prohibited in the area, and the authorities had not given the necessary permission. And so tonight, maybe that cute little tiger is working away on the assistant mayor. Who knows? I just want you to know that the tigers... Now that, you know, there's a problem here, though, with tigers. Although, I've always felt that the more lethal the danger, the more beautiful it is. No, there's a direct correlation between beauty and danger. In fact, some of the most deadly snakes in the world are beautiful. You ever see a coral snake? I'll tell you, that coral snake is about as pretty a thing as nature's ever created. Beautiful little snake. Oh, yeah. Did you ever see a hooded cobra? Look really carefully. That's a beautiful snake. It's a lovely creature. Did you ever see, for example, another, speaking of deadly things, did you ever see a lion? Beautiful animal. Oh, boy, he stretches, you see. Looks around. You ever see those great big old fat teeth? And they're so white. So white, I'll tell you, though. So there's a definite correlation between beauty and evil. And any guy, males all secretly know this. Because, let me tell you, I have known many a stainless steel chick in my time. But you get involved with this girl, and it's like walking into an electric fan, going full blast. Beautiful. Well, look at some of the other beautiful things. You ever looked at a fighter plane? It's a beautiful thing. That's beautiful. Think of other things. You ever watched a great thunderstorm come up? It's beautiful. Oh, it is. Look carefully. All that rose and that flickering lightning. Those great shifting colors. It's a beautiful thing. The sea. There's a classic, boy. And that's a real bad scene. Oh, boy. And the more beautiful the sea, quite often, the more deadly it is. Because that water changes color. And that shows you things. Bad. As a flyer, I can tell you that sometimes, you know, you get up there and some of the most beautiful weather is some of the most treacherous weather. Oh, it's true that a cold winter day, gray, cold winter day, is quite often one of the safest flying days around. Did you know that? And you go out in the middle of the summer and the temperature is 85 degrees, 90 degrees. The sun is sitting up there in the sky. Oh, look out for that density altitude, friends. Look out. You get convection currents that level to flip you right over on your back and suck you down into a big hole. And you never see it. Beauty. Never thought of it that way, huh? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of little things like that. Have you ever seen the coast of Maine, for example? Those great rocks, those great, great, enormous black cliffs rising. Some of the most treacherous sea along the entire seaboard is right there. Thunder Hole. Oh, boy. Yeah. The desert. You fly over that desert, let me tell you, friends, I don't think there's anything more beautiful than to fly over the Sahara Desert at twilight. It is indescribably beautiful. One of the great beautiful things of all time. And yet, if all the people who were swallowed up by the Sahara Desert were to stand one hand to the next, they would stretch even longer than that Peel's Beer crowd. I'll tell you. Yes, sir. Speaking of beautiful things, I'll never forget the time I saw my first northern iceberg. Let me tell you, not many things come prettier than an iceberg. Stands up there tall and sharp and white and clean, the sun glinting. You could just see those blue crevices and just drifting down like some kind of magic fairy rivers. You see the water moving around it, and the water is blue, and it reflects that iceberg. Oh, boy. But look out. Look out. Right now, tonight, the Titanic lies in almost 800 feet of water as a result of tangling with that little piece of beauty. And there are other things. For example, the Peruvian jungle. The beauty of the Peruvian jungle, I cannot even remember. Great orchids, enormous tropical birds, tremendous flowers. You could smell those cold Andean rivers going down to join the Amazon. I remember looking out across this river in fact, it didn't even have a name. It was a tributary river that came down into a stream that finally joined the Ucayali, which eventually joined the Amazon. And it was about as wide as 6th Avenue. Now, the Andes rose up off into the very close, near distance, just rose straight up in the air, all covered with white snow. And this river flowed along. The water almost looked like crystal. You could drink it. It really was clear, beautiful, gray water. At least that's the way it looked. Cold, ice cold. Just flowing. You had this feeling, you know, if you had a fly rod, you could sit there all day and the reeds grew out of the sides and the jungle came down to the edge of it. And the guy that I was with says, We've got to boil this water for about 15 minutes before we drank it. And we were going to drink this water. And I said, why? He says, well, this is some of the most deadly water in the world. I said, what's in it? He said that there is a rare parasite that lives in this water. An invisible microscopic parasite that destroys the liver. And he said, and it is fatal. He said, the only way we can get rid of it is to boil it. And I said, well, you mean it always works? Always. He says, this water is alive with it. And so I take the bucket and I start to go down the shore to get some of this water, which was the little taskie that had been given to me. And I start to go down the shore and he says, oh, yeah, by the way, he says, stay on the shore and get out on that pontoon of the plane and dip up the water there. He says, don't get in the water. And I said, why? Piranha. So, you know, I thought, well, gee whiz, you know, the Raritan River looks pretty rotten, and the Hackensack River looks like a mud hole, but it doesn't have piranha. And as far as I know, you don't have these rare liver flukes that turn your ears blue and turn you inside out in 3 weeks. Oh, I've seen some lovely things that were dangerous as all get out. For example, curiously enough, one of the most beautiful things in operation today. Have you ever seen a missile cruiser? A missile cruiser. This is a cruiser, a ship of the line, a naval ship, a particular type of ship. A long, sleek, fast cruiser. And they're lovely. I saw one from the air one time. I was flying in a helicopter off of a carrier. And down below us was the cruiser Boston. You might have heard of it. It's a missile cruiser. And the decks were teak wood and had been wholly stoned right down to the point, and they were glistening in the Mediterranean sun, and they looked like ivory. It was carved out of ivory, a beautiful ship. You could see that long wake she was making in the blue med, leaving behind all that great white frothy water. And it was a missile cruiser, one of the most beautiful ships in the line. I looked down and said, "That's beautiful." The pilot says, "Oh, boy, she sure is." And she was cutting through that water, and I could see in the up there in the front of the ship there where they had this great missile launching pad. You see it sitting there, the big reflector behind it. It was a little touch where you could see where the rockets that had been fired off of this baby had seared the edge of that great shield. And she went sailing along in the sun, with all of her signal flags flying, and the wind sighing through her radar tower. It's beautiful. Well, there were other things that have this sneaky, yet beautiful quality to them. So you never know. Speaking of beautiful things that have a tendency to leap out and get you, what is more beautiful than, say, a Damascus sword? Have you ever seen in the museums, you took one of these beautiful carved Damascus swords. Oh, boy. Just made right for lopping off heads of the infidels, you know, or vice versa. Or is it the infidels that lop the heads of the crusaders off? I don't know. But the beauty, the strange correlation between beauty and evil has always existed. You notice that whenever the devil is shown, he's a handsome man. Oh, yeah, think about that. The devil's got high cheekbones. He's always... You never see a short, fat, pimply devil. No, you know, little short... No, he always has this magnificent sculpted head, and his eyes are deep set. He looks a little like Gregory Peck, you know. The devil always has, you know, with that cut goatee. Oh, the devil is a handsome man. He always wears these great clothes. He's always dressed to the nines with a big cape, that red silk lining. The devil is a handsome son of a gun. You know, let's face it. If he walked into Cheetah tonight, I mean, tell you. In fact, he's probably down there tonight right now. Maybe leading the band. Who knows? You know, playing the Fender bass. I don't know. But nevertheless, oh, the correlation is always there. I'll tell you one of the eeriest ones of all. I happened to be in a position one time aboard a ship. And have you ever actually seen... I better not. it gets a little scary at this point. But suffice it to say, I've always been intrigued. Myself, personally, I've always been intrigued with the peculiar parallel between beauty and danger. It seems to somehow go together. Let's take the city, New York. New York, in a crazy way, is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. It is. Certainly one of the most exciting cities in the world. And yet, it can kill you in a lot of ways, this city. I tell you, it can grind you right down to little itsy-bitsy pieces. Oh, yeah. And there are other things. I remember one time flying over Labrador. Now, the particular time I was flying over Labrador was in the dead of winter. And as far as the eye could see, this beautiful, unbelievable, green, rolling country went all the way to the horizon. And between every rolling hill, there must have been 1,000 lakes visible, just looking around the horizon at that point. And frozen rivers and frozen forests. Black forests that were so green they looked like they were made out of India ink. And yet, Labrador is one of the most bleak, dangerous countries on the face of the globe. Do you know that? Oh, a real killer. And yet, I flew over this thing and I thought, gee, that's even prettier than Darien. Look at it. And yet, on the other hand, Darien is one of the most dangerous of cities. Oh, yeah. A lot of ways. A lot of ways. Suck you right down into that little league morass, and you'll be lost without a trace in the great swamp of the PTA. You'll go down for the last time, leaving a few little bubbles of martini and diet Yoo-Hoo behind you. And they won't weep a tear. And just swing loose. Just take a deep breath once in a while. And it's too bad isometrics are now out of style. What's in now? Jogging, huh? What'll be the next one? Well, 6 and 1, half a dozen of the other.